Blog Talk Radio.
I hope you are well. I truly hope you are well. It's amazing time. We really don't have to speak about the relevance, the relevant need of masonry, the purpose of it, do we? The newspapers are doing that for us. Curious when we're swimming in an environment that has a heightened ideology driving a lot of what's being done by the masses, I guess. The concern really hasn't gone away. In a lot of ways, if you've read a little bit about Greece, you know, the early starts, you want to know a little bit about democracy, a little bit. Like everything else, you know, the original is sort of transformed with usage. I'm sure the original hammer was sort of a modest contraption compared to a modern hammer or a screwdriver or any kind of tool. And I'm thinking that, you know, we have to realize that that similar kind of refinement and so-called progress. I always like to still have wooden handles on my hammers, but you know, when I see something with a plastic or fiberglass handle, it takes care of this, you know, the vibration in your hands after a day. If you've ever been working with a hammer for a full day, or you know, or equipment that leaves your hands numb because of the vibration, then you know what I'm talking about. And it doesn't. It can be in the operating theater or on top of a roof doing some construction, or in a farmer's field trying to bring in a crop. Ideology, a system, it's a system of ideas, especially one that forms the basis of economic or political theory. It's what's referred to as ideology. We've had the recent exposure to that in this country with a prime minister that censored the release of scientific documents. Hard to believe. It's almost like we're working in sort of pre-World War II, another time and another setting and another mentality. To think that somebody would attempt that is an offense to any free-thinking people, and an offense to a country that claims to have constitutional protections. You know, do we need... do we give up these freedoms that were so hard fought, and do we react? It's not up to the people in power to restrict their use. Anybody in power, anybody with a little bit of power, any area, whether it's any kind of authority, whether it's religious or political or economic or paramilitary, or military, once unchecked, will always become overbearing. Now, just the evidence of that is history. Just take a look. Always. And why is that? Ask yourself that. A little bit of, does it sort of really, in that sense, when we hear people talking about something going through their head, a little bit of leadership, somebody gets a little bit crazed by that leadership, that appetite for controlling people and telling them, ordering them, directing them. And to think that you could direct thought, you know, direct people's thoughts away from the truth. Now, we know that we have to be able to have some sense of relative truth, but truth is what it is. The science is constantly developing new findings. So what we knew 100 years ago has been eclipsed. We've been continuously refining. Just like you and I, we're going through, our gene pools are going through constant mutations, if you listen to what the scientists tell us. Constant change and caused by our need to for our biology to adapt. So we changed to move along. You didn't think that all of a sudden that we were popped out a few thousand years ago in the form that you find today. Come on, give it up a little bit. You're thinking, if that being the case, we'd be still dragging around stone tools, wouldn't we? Or who would be using a tool? We'd be scraping with our fingers. We're thinking, sensate little creatures, as I say this apologetically, because this audience is well aware, absolutely well aware. So even on the 57th day of the year, you know, you're absolutely aware. There's only 3 weeks to equinox when we achieve balance. So in the meantime, when we're in imbalanced group of people, we can at least have a tendency to laugh at ourselves. Yesterday I was in the company of severely strict and stern Masons, and it was comical, because there were some things going on that were absolutely hysterical, you know, those little coincidental things that you can't avoid, that have a charm all their own. And it's like you have to wait to see if the adult in the room laughs or smiles, so that you can tell whether the whole hoi polloi can laugh and smile. I just found it just dripping in irony. I'm fascinated by those types of things. Absolutely fascinated by that kind of a notion that I have to, that you have to be that kind of regulated. But it's not to say we can just, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. A certain decorum is necessary, and a sense of bearing, bearing and a sense of a desire not to inconvenience our brethren. That's important. We can all do all of that and still be spontaneous and in the moment, as the psychologists like to remind us. So when you see these ideas, put this to yourself and give me some notion. Is Masonry an ideology? Is it a system of ideas, and does it have a political theory and policy? You know, that's a tendency. That's not necessarily what ideology is about. But does it fit the definition of an ideology? A body of ideas reflecting social needs and aspirations of the group and the class and you and I as people. Coherence that makes this an ideology? Well, you know, okay. What's some of the common ideologies that we know? Oh, well, okay, capitalism. That's an ideology. That's not man, where do you start? Where do you end up? The human mind, if you're one of those adherents and thinks that, you know, the creator, the great architect of the universe is beyond my understanding, my humility and my connection with the creator of the universe means I can't put shape to the creator. but in my vocabulary, in my very clumsy way, I'll give the creator a gender. That's offensive to a lot of, to 51% of the population of the world who feel that the gender is, you know, when I'm saying, picking one gender, if I'm saying that it's a he and it's the father figure, that's isolated for some women, that feels isolating. And I can, if I understand that position, then I don't mean to create offense. The creator is without form, and is above, somehow above. It's some level of striving, some level of light, of insight. And in my faith, that was epitomized or formed metaphorically into the capacity, the corporal notions of a man. And right on. But for my Muslim friends, the very word, the very book is God. That's a sacred process. It's interesting. Everybody's truth, what you believe is the true creator, is the truth. To mock anybody's faith speaks more about the person doing the mocking than the insult, the notion of insult, because truly, the great faiths are beyond that notion that, you know, that murderous zeal to preserve and dominate. They're beyond that. They're too vital to existence, too vital to thought, to be reduced to aggression and violence and anger and irritation. The ideas themselves present no threat, but they instead present answers. Now, are those answers relevant to you and me? Well, I guess we already know the Freemason in you is going to want to examine, hold that out at arm's length. There's a fellow that I know that I think, I've never really had a chance to speak with him about this, but for me, he epitomizes this. He's a retired fellow now, and he's quite artistic. And I find that when I talk with him, he's very lyrical. He's always a bit sort of cautious around talking. But I always find that he's kind of a lyrical fellow. And I tend to think that he's more of the poet in private than he is in public. And he seems to have been raised with a sense that anything clever needs to be said with a degree of intensity. I think he wrote something just the other day that came to me. I thought it was really profound. I said, you know, you can have the sense of ridiculousness and in the fabric of our understanding, we can laugh at ourselves. We can find the joy, the absurdity, the irony. We can find beauty. But the other person's, when we're sensing that somebody else's truths are somehow within us limited, then what we're simply doing is striving for a different truth. And our journey will continue until we find that, and we find that comfort level. In the meantime, does that mean all the other truths are wrong? Well, not quite wrong. It's not about right or wrong. It's not my truth. Now, the curious part is when we find ideologues amongst us who want to determine the truth for us. So they'll start to censor the exchange of ideas. They'll censor the media. They'll censor science as our previous prime minister did. I'm absolutely staggering that a country like where I live was completely unprepared for that kind of insult, intellectual, moral, and ethical insult. And yet, you know, there are a lot of people that will jump on any train that seems to be in charge du jour. What's the popular thought? Well, you know, people without conviction are easily swayed. So, you know, he had a lot of people convinced that this was the new conservatism, a new way of being a conservative person. Far from it. That's like saying that all people with a sort of the relative liberal or relative conservative view is somehow wrong. Well, Masonry, above all, teaches us that if we're about is pointing out the wrongness of the world around us, then we're not a galvanizing feature at all. We're not thinking about the common good. We're thinking about ourselves. If your point of view, if my point of view is to be right, that means that somebody else is always wrong. Well, quite frankly, that seems to me totally confused with the picture of the world and the universe around me that's being taught through the principles and ethics and values and the catechisms of Freemasonry. Because I don't want to live in a world divided. Masons aren't talking about divisions. Oh, we conjure up ways. When we get clumsy in our thinking and let the narrative deteriorate, then, of course, instead of being able to explain ourselves, that we're not about divisiveness, we're about inclusions. Well, there's some apparent contradictions as soon as we say that. Well, we need to be able to explain those contradictions. A few years ago, I remember my dear old father talking to me about a professional golfer, Lee Trevino. And I always took this story to be true. That when he went to Augusta, he was playing in the Masters. He wasn't allowed, because he was a Mexican man, he wasn't allowed in the clubhouse. And so he would, and as a protest, you know, Mexicans weren't allowed in the clubhouse. And here's the part that he was, you know, you one of the champions at the time. Of course, you're going to bring him in. But what I'm taught was that he refused. He went out and changed his golf shoes in the parking lot. Just like you and I did for how many years, we always put on our golf shoes and out of the back of our car and then head off with our clubs. Meanwhile, you know, they have the locker with the plate with his name waiting for him as an exception. I like that kind of man of integrity. I do. And I like that story. I hope there's some validity in it, but it makes me admire a man that would step up for what he believed in. He didn't, you know, talk to the press about it. He just did it. And when people understood what he did, the story went on. Father to son, to me, to you. Is it valid? I hope so, because it's inspiring. But every so often we're asked to stand up for what we believe in. Did we do anything when we discovered, you know, that we had a prime minister censoring science? Well, you know, we can have our own points of view on things, but it really isn't right that we debate our sense of, and get defensive about our sense of facts. Facts are what they are. And we can, at our own risk, try to ignore the truth. What that means is if we're followers of truth, that we're receptive to, we're open-minded to changing our point of view. New discovery. We're receptive to the dilettante, that group of people that will always be at the cutting edge. Always at the cutting edge of whatever's happening. This sort of the irritant, that act of behaving like a being an amateur dabbler. You know, that's dilettantism. You know, I can lay claim to that when I was early in my student days. It was like I was acting like I knew what I was doing. It takes a long time to sort of become mature enough to recognize the anxieties and politics around me and realize what I know and what I don't know. And that's, you have to became comfortable with that in my own skin. And then it's, you know, I'm the kind of maritime Canada work ethic where you roll your sleeves up and get busy. So the contemporary terms is a person who enjoys the arts or someone who enjoys a field without investing the usual required effort, you know. So I think dilettantism is part and parcel of a large operation, a large organization, a large belief system like masonry. People that are sort of dabbler at the edges, they engage in masonry without investing the required effort. Now, I picked up the term true mason. You've heard me talk. We've talked about that on Masonic Effects. The true mason is the one, you know, the one that is putting in the required effort. What's the required effort? Enough. Yesterday I was around a fellow that doesn't particularly suffer fools gladly, but every time I'm around him, he comes up with these little pearls. And and I just love it because he was talking about some definitions or meanings of things, meanings of sort of the sacred words and the position of certain officers in certain lodges. And it's absolutely fascinating listening to him. The fact that he feels that, you know, I would enjoy that really pleases me because it does. I have no interest. I have sort of a dilettante interest in understanding why certain officers are placed in lodges. I've read and forgot more of that than I've forgotten more than I remember. But it's fascinating. You have to remember, I sail, so everything on my boat has a name that tells me what it is or where it is. And masonry is the same. Well, I walk into a lodge and I just have that comfort feeling now. If I have to refresh my memory about these things, I'm hoping that someone else in the room will have that at the tip of their tongue when I ask. I don't feel that, you know, I don't want to crowd. I've got such limited capacity as it is. I don't want to crowd it up with all these unnecessary. But the conversation after giving out some of these examples floated beautifully into a description of, you know, somebody asking his family if they'd seen his watch. You know where it was. Yeah, it was on his wrist. Gosh. Or sitting at the table, can't find his knife, and you know where it is. Yeah, right in front of him. Or around here, where is my glasses? You stole my glasses. Well, you know where this goes, gentlemen. I'm sure you've tried to enlist the brain power of other people around you to overcome some of these gaffes, these polite, delightful, charming gaffes that occur to men of our station in life. Never would I suggest that we are becoming aged and feeble. These are simply those delightful gaffes that make you bring out that boyish charm in all of us. You know what I mean, gents? Hey, let's sit back and sip a little. Go put a head on whatever you're sipping there, whatever beverage you have beside you. Today, I don't have a whole lot to do today, so I'm going to go and just put a little splash of something else into my espresso here. This is a little bit of a tune that I think you're going to enjoy. I do with all the jazz theme. The jazz, of course, it's the music of the world. I was often left in my wildest dreams to think what music really would make everybody's foot tap. And I thought, oh, of course it's I used to think it was James Brown, but that's only after we've had a few drinks. But the toe tapper is jazz. I was at a lovely, lovely banquet in Hamilton. The lodges there are the most incredible hosts. Just every little detail they anticipate is just your comfort is important to them. And I was in a position where I was asked to say a little word at the end of the meal, like you're prone to do. And they had a jazz singer performing. People were up dancing. The music was fabulous. Completely, for me, unexpected. I'm not a big fan of a cappella. Oh, it's like you might as well pull my teeth without painkiller. But some people like it, but not many in the room. This place was just ripper. Those guys, hats off to you boys in Hamilton. Absolutely hats off to you. And if you don't mind me speaking out to you, we're coming up to 150th birthday here in Canada. While it's on my mind, wouldn't kill you to start talks about building a Grand Lodge building. Big, the complete library, the galleries, give us a lodge where we can put in 1,000 seats and a cathedral seating and do it with the pomp and circumstance that our order warrants. It wouldn't kill you. Only, you know what would be really interesting is sitting back and watching what you fellas come up with. Because you've got, whatever it is, you've got it. Yeah, you may have your detractors around the world, and oh my goodness, what am I saying here? Heretical language here amongst us, but you got it. You boys in Norway, how did you do that? How did you form? What did Scotland do? Well, of course Scotland's going to do it. England, yeah, of course they're going to just pull it. They have to. That's just the culture. Our culture is so bloody young, eh? Like it's still forming. Give us a little bit of room here. Come on, no excuses, but give us a little room, because we could blow the doors off you if we put our mind to it. Well, that's what I'm saying to you boys in Hamilton. Put your mind to it, lads, and see if the support is out there. Don't be so timid. And just create that monument that's worth preserving for another 1,000 years. A place where I'm not going to see if it fits into my schedule to join you. I'm going to make damn sure I've got the time open to come and sit in that environment where the very architecture itself is inspiring. Oh, we are built on the notions of builders, of Freemasons. The builders of palaces, the builders of cathedrals. What we're talking about isn't bricks and mortar. It's the inspiration that you feel. Walk into them. Just walk in and sit down. And what happens? You have this sense of something bigger than yourself. Now, face it, every one of us wants to find a person that's inspiring. Every jack one of us, you, me, every one of us, because when we're around inspiring people, we have a chance, and we know it, of becoming better and more than we are. But being around inspiring people does that, and we search them out. So collectively, to the brainiacs, to the talent pool down in Hamilton, yeah, do that for us. Just give it a shot. Give it a shot. I don't think I could honestly say I'll be completely surprised if you come up with something brilliant. I won't be completely surprised because I'm kind of expecting it of you. There's just something goes on around there, and where would we put a building? Would we put it in the Ottawa Valley? Yeah, well, they do it right. Would personally, for me, if I was the center of the Masonic universe, I'd be probably climbing up somewhere in the middle of Algonquin Park and building my building out of wood. I mean, I am what I am. And I would make it of this style that we haven't seen in the 20th century. Get some of the log builders to do it. But then I would be concerned because it's a temporary structure. So where would the stone builders go? Bring the stone up there. But that's only my vision of the Canada that I see has appealed to people that are frightened and don't feel safe and want to have a future. Well, here's a little bit of something that'll make you feel good. This is a song called Come Away With Me. Yeah, you know it. Sing along, boys.
Come away with me. Come away with me. Now we
if you can. If you want to see something quite beautiful, take a look at the main lodge building of the Norwegian Order of Freemasons. It's in the center of Oslo. It's just a charming building. Just charming. And when you look at it, it just expresses that notion. Perhaps it's a North American notion, of course. But it just has such expression and elevation. An elevation in its honor, you know, it's the distinction of masonry. It's been, apparently, the lodge receives this directive from Danish Freemasonic lodges back from 1749 to 1818. I understand that, and I'm not too sure if I understand all the details about Norway and Denmark forming a union, So you have it, yeah? The lodges are poetic. Lodge St. Olaf's to the White Leopard. How can you not like the symbolism and imagery of something like that? Anyway, that's what I have in mind for us here. And, you know, if you haven't been, if you get a chance to visit the Masonic Building in Detroit, by all means, it's absolutely stunner, just a stunner. So we're good. The commentary today is about imagination. It's a play on that. And the question to you is, does Masonry suffer a fear of technology? And a good question. That's why I put it as a question. Optics are becoming reality. So what a thing if you appear a certain way, whether that's your intention or not, that's the reality. And I'm sure you've experienced some of this. You understand this in your own life. Displacement of the middle class. These are things that are happening around us today. What's going on with Masonry? And we have a sense of importance. It's almost like we're trying to understand, do we have a relevance, and will that be relevant in the future? Well, today I live in a world where technology has been, and these big trade deals have been, you know, championed by so many governments. And now we're understanding that there's been a downside, and the downside is the displacement of workers. Well, that's not good enough to displace so many people with sort of low or limited skilled jobs with technology. Well, as technology advances, the calculus suggests that technology will be eventually be able to replace you and me. So do I need a wealth manager? Not when I have an algorithm. I can bring it up and pay a fee, and it's on my app or on my screen, computer screen. Do I need a doctor? Well, not when I can be monitored on my wrist for my blood sugars without having to use a pin to do a glucose level, or have my heart continuously monitored by equipment and transmitted and alerting my health providers. So that I'm constantly being monitored at a fee. Polarization of wealth. The little oddity that didn't matter when we were living after the war. We were we were doing a lot of things wrong at that time. And who would ever say so? My goodness, you know. There was still the viciousness of battle in the air. Viciousness of battle. We don't want to think about those unpleasant things because we can turn vicious, and you don't want that, do you? Well, we've experienced that we have to look at that old period. It was what it was. And there were problems that had to be corrected and are still haunting us to this day. Up until 1984 in this country, we're still taking children from their families by force and placing them with the culturally predominant group in this country. Can you imagine being a six-year-old taken from your family into a different culture? Because there was a thought that this was going to be beneficial for you. No thought to your cultural and emotional and psychological development at all. At all. A good child was a quiet child. Just beat them into submission. Well, the disgraces of that church and state will haunt our generations, our country. It's a stain on our culture forever. And that doesn't go away. Here in Canada, we don't like to deal with things like that. We don't like to deal with the hideousness of our culture. But we're quite famous for taking care of business. When we see there's something wrong, we do take care of it. We write it. And maybe we owe the influence of the Scots and the Irish. We just take care of business. That's all there is to that. And the dominance of certain classes, that's coming to an end. That's coming to an end. People matter. Either people, all of us, we're in this together and matter, or we don't. So here we've declared that, yep, good, bad, or ugly, we matter, and we've got to get on with it. And we're going to make the changes necessary to correct the wrongs. And we're in an imperfect world. So now, this age, 2017, we're claiming we've discovered it. This is stuff, boys, we've known for a long time. We've been sold a line of guff by the news media, by politicians, by military. Everybody's got their own little spin on what they want us to know, and so that it colors what they want us to believe. And generally, it leads back repeatedly to some level of conflict. Well, if that's not your Masonic nature, then what do you do with those influences? You just shrug and go along with it? Well, I think you become swayed. You become seduced over the generations, just like our younger generations now, sadly, were seduced by advertising aimed at making children eat things that were very flavorful but absolutely ruinous to their health. So junk food became the new cancer. In the background, we had the polarization of wealth. Poor people, it was thought that was their own fault, eh? As long as the system allows 1% of us to amass an obscene level of wealth, then the whole system is purposeful. Well, it isn't anymore. It isn't anymore. We need some way for our talented economists to come up with a theory that allows for the redistribution of wealth without the crassness of we can't go back in our history. We have to come up with a new type of language that allows for the redistribution of wealth in a way that's palatable with our belief system. We've had some jammy kinds of ideas, and nobody really jams an idea at us, not for very long. Maybe a half a generation or a full generation. Maybe 60 or 70 years is what I'm saying. But change is accelerating. People around deserve to have the progress occurring in a shorter time frame than a generation. And that window for change has continued to open more and more and more, which is good. The changes, we can fretfully think of all the reasons why that's just heretical kind of language for a Mason. But at the same instance, you can find an abundant amount of reasons to that in our training and in the metaphors of our initiation processes that demonstrate that need to probe the darkness. Probe the darkness always. Search out the light, that understanding. Nowhere is it said, even in the subtext of Masonry, that, oh, by the way, this is going to be bloody easy. Don't worry about it. This is just simple. You're just going to fall into these new insights. As a matter of fact, you don't even have to change your mind. You're a damn genius. You're a Masonic genius when you join, don't you know? And as you get older, you're going to become more of a genius. Yeah, you don't have to do anything. Just wake up, put on your apron, and there you go. You're a genius just because you hang around with people that read. Well, dilettante, are you the dilettante? Are you doing enough work? Are you doing enough? The work is like, if you're not bent over backwards so far you feel like you're going to break in half, then you're not working hard enough. You're just not working hard enough. If you're not doing your practice at the cello so much that your fingers bleed, you're not working hard enough. You're just not, until your arms ache from the chisel and hammer when you're working on your sculpture, or your wrists and hands start to become swollen from the solvents you use mixing your paints. You're not working hard enough, or you just abandon the task to somebody else. because it's a little stifling. You have to go out and do a little bit of thinking and reading and begin to understand things a little differently. Well, you know, it's not any easier today to be a tradesman or a farmer, because you get a lot of sort of glib comments made that just are dishonest and inaccurate. How can we? We can't possibly replace the talent with a bureaucracy. But that comes full circle. It always does. Don't worry about it. And even governments in the midst of creating more bureaucracy are well aware of the limits. Does that stop them? Autocrats are rarely stopped by reality, aren't they? No. So we sit back. So the despots have tried. Autocrats have tried. Terrorists have tried to play. The politicians feed on it. They just feed on our uncertainty and on our fear. And being able to influence consensus. They feed on it. But they all fail. What they feed on is our sense of hope that this bombastic fellow up there who talks as if he knows what he's talking about must know what he's talking about. And he has the solutions and answers to my problems. Well, news to self, note to self, if somebody else could solve your problems, could you solve mine, please? So you've got all that extra time. So terrorists can't beat it out of us. They can't beat the hope out of us. The despots and the autocrats, let's use authority. That's all we need, more discipline. Give it your best shot. Honestly, give it your best shot. Try and whip the individual out of the individual. Whip that independence and that thing. Just challenge it. Break that person down. That's the way to make us more humane. Make us more. That's greatness in itself. Bullies. Only today we call it bullying. And we've got soldiers that are just bleeding when they come back from the front. And those poor sons of guns, instead of just being ignored to their drink after battle, the nightmares. You know, after the Second World War, there's a massive surge in divorces in Europe. Massive surges. Men that had lived violence were violent. Divorce rate skyrocketed. The media, there was a lot of reason that we wanted to demonstrate a profile of peace and harmony, wasn't there? After so much degradation of the human condition, today we recognize that the extraordinary levels of suicide and substance abuse are a product of what we've done, what we've asked of these men and women. We've asked too much, too often. Now, why is it that we'll see people volunteering, the zealots, and they'll come back and they're just on top of it? But a person subjected to the press gang may suffer. There is that limit where you see too much. You see too much. What is that limit? And can you train that out of a person, that switch? Not unless we want to make them completely, you know, psychotic, out of touch with reality. No. Now, we nurse them. We care for these people. We recognize their agony. And we apply ourselves to helping that person regain their sense of well-being. A sense of common purpose. Yeah, Masonry has a bearing. Around the world, there are loud questions, the questions that were always murmured. This age that we're living in is the product of political correctness, the things that weren't said in polite company. Well, they just festered, absolutely just festered. And until now we've got a problem. Now we're dealing with that. Political correctness isn't trusted anymore. The establishments have lost their validity. what's important for masonry around this kind of a notion, see, is to be prepared, not to be singing from the same song sheet, but to have done the work. No room for the dilettante. You need to do enough work so that you can understand and provide a thoughtful answer. A thoughtful and imaginative and authentic answer. I don't want our order compared to, you know, Augusta, where, you know, remember the drama that occurred when a woman wanted to become a member of Augusta. Well, you and I would have known her for her term in office with George Bush, his cabinet, Ms. Condoleezza Rice. Brilliant. Was that a political statement? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And which way did it go? The right way. It was necessary. It was way overdue. Now we're seeing that over in China, they're coming around to the Olympics. And the course that's been chosen for the Olympics doesn't allow women. I don't get tired of this stuff. I don't want in any way for the order, our order, this brilliant, brilliant order based on insight, to be categorized with that tepid smugness of white exclusion. I don't want that. We don't deserve it. So the nasty little question is always for us not to take a defensive. You can be defensive if you want. But it just reinforces the fact that the people questioning us are onto something when we start to act defensive. Much more appropriate when we take the question seriously and offer a thoughtful response. That means we need an opportunity to think it through ourselves. We can't think it through when we're in a room of people that don't have the self-discipline to control their emotion. Or, you know, they've reached a certain age where they believe that they don't need any new ideas, that they have enough. That there's enough, they've decided. And oh my goodness, now we're just waiting for the Grim Reaper to come to get rid of them so that enlightenment can thrive again. It's always been that way, you know. Eventually the despot is gone and displaced or replaced. And enlightenment, insight, prevails. Now, put your foot on the Masonic accelerator. We are now in a process where, as our numbers are shifting, you know, it's quite interesting. Dilettantism is being replaced. We want people that are, the zealots are coming to the surface, of course, you know, the people that are experts in everything really haven't done enough work about the philosophy, you know, the understanding and the meaning of masonry, the preservation of the third degree. You've got my back? Oh, show it. Is that by dominating me with your themes, with your notion and in translation of how logic should function? And a lot of, I think masonry's come to a point where we can add. We have a sort of a traditional expression and practice of masonry, and that will always be the case. That's our link. It's unique and it's charming. However, that doesn't preclude us embracing technology to allow a person to experience and be connected with masonry from wherever they are on the planet, or above the planet for that matter. We've never opened lodge with somebody on the space station. I guess that's just a matter of time. We've had masons on the moon, but not in an organized sense like, you know, we did when we are tiling the lodge. That will come. No. But we have to think, create different avenues. that instead of sort of wondering if we've done something wrong, we haven't done something wrong. There's nothing wrong with these people out there that are curious about masonry. Nothing wrong at all. Masonry has always adapted. And part of our early constitution, our earliest constitutions, before we had ritual and before we had adherence to strict ritual, before that notion of uniformity was so necessary because of the expanse of masonry, as the scale changed, things within masonry changed, of course. But we have also the notion that that we adapt. You adapt. What's the dominant faith of the lodge? Whatever is the predominant faith in the area. Whatever. And what do we strive for? That faith that all men can agree on. All people. This is 21st century. We're talking people now. The language of the 18th and 19th century doesn't work anymore. It's still there. But can we parse the language out from the process? Once upon a time, all our history that was taught was military history. Oh, my goodness, was it dry and narrow? Oh. And to think that that's the way the reality of those situations was captured was by, you know, the command structure. I sit down with a fellow just the other day, and every second sentence has something to do with tactical management. Gee, you wonder what branch he's with. You can tell. Mason anticipates and stays above all of that. Yeah. Here, a little bit of Horace Silver to help take us out of this show today. We'll wrap up with a bit of Living the Enlightenment. It's from his album Blue Note. Very cool. Thank you. It's Horace Silver. It's called Lonely Woman. Yeah, it's beautiful. Just beautiful. Remarkable music. To think. It wasn't that long ago, Horace was cooking. It's from his album, Song for My Father. Here, I want to read a poem for you. This is taken from a poem to which are added several songs. Edinburgh, 1739. And it's accredited to Edward Oakley in a speech delivered to the Worshipful Society of Freemasons in 1728, even earlier, and bound with Cole's Constitutions. Almost the entire speech at the Palladium. But check this out. But order and simplicity alone, which in fair nature's works so fair are shown, which now the schemes of architecture still can claim just wonder or display just skill. By these old Greece and Rome their schemes did raise, and shone the patterns of succeeding days, but by these their generous modern sons are known, a Kent, a Flintcroft, a Burlington. Other Masonic literature is even more explicit in the glorification of the lavishly domestic. An early anonymous Masonic tract accepted an essentially Hobbes view of the brutality of the human condition. Yeah. Should we talk about Hobbes and what that means? Of course. Just absolutely necessary here. Thomas Hobbes, Malmesbury, he's an English philosopher. He was born in 1588. Just to give you a sense that this is what was being read. I always think that he looks like some Scottish comics of the day, but he offered us moral and political philosophy. He's considered to be the founding father of modern political philosophy. But the interesting part, in the 17th century, he's now regarded as one of the handful of truly great political philosophers. And he developed a work called Leviathan, and it's often, when people have read it, it'll be in part of the conversation about Plato and Aristotle and Locke and Rousseau and Kant. Remember when we went through that sort of phase, that addiction to the philosophers back about 3 years ago here on Masonic Effects? Maybe we should dust some of that off. But what Tom could contribute really in early in the development of what's we've become known as the social contract theory. The method of it was justifying political principles or arrangements that appeal to the agreement that would be made just among suitably situated, rational, free, and equal persons. Suitably situated. It was infamous for having used the social contract method to arrive at the astonishing conclusion that we ought to submit to the authority of an absolute, undivided, and unlimited sovereign power. You see some of this written into into Masonry, a submission to authority. Some lead, some obey. Really? Now, it's written, but tell me, does that make sense? Is that the way you live your life? So you're wondering about the gap. Well, let's not get into whether we're my father's stronger than your father kinds of or pissing matches. But what I want to know is how we approach this. So the boys in Australia, our brethren in Australia, do you approach this question the same way? Or how do you approach this question of submission to unlimited and divine power, of sovereign power? Now, remember, we want to be sort of relatively kind to Thomas here. It was a sort of a methodological innovation that he's really talking about, but it did have impact. on political philosophy, and he made substantive conclusions that served mostly to foil the as a foil for the development of more palatable positions. His moral philosophy has been less influential than his political, in part because the theory is very ambiguous to have garnered any general consensus. Most scholars, most students have taken that Hobbes affirmed some sort of personal relativism or subjectivism, but views that Hobbes espoused divine command theory, like virtue ethics or rule egoism, or form of protectivism. It supports his texts, and, it does. Hobbes held that the true doctrine of the laws of nature is the true moral philosophy. The laws of nature. You live, you die. The court of nature, the natural law doesn't have a... There is a study of natural law. I'm not talking here to dilettante Masons. I'm talking to real Masons. Do a little bit of scratch the surface and take a look at natural law and what it tells us. Natural law is not really big on appeals, Man-made laws like that notion of appeal. Well, maybe we'll be kind if we reconsider you. Maybe it's a kindness. It's the largesse of us. Or the admission that, we can screw up and make mistakes. Nature doesn't really allow itself, the law of nature doesn't really allow itself that caveat. All of that from an 18th century poem. But order and simplicity alone, don't we love the notion? Maybe that is Thomas More just singing into our ear. We love that notion of simplicity and order, by which fair nature's works are shown. Nature, you look at that, that's just what the author is saying. Nature, it's all simple. And there's order in nature. And if you look at what we've constructed, there seems to be chaos and conflict. Nature, there's conflict out there? Not much. Things are nurtured, things mutate, things grow. Things have a course of their existence and they die. The energy is recycled. And you can see why there was this movement, these movements, intellectual movements, that suggested the laws of nature need to be more prevalent. If we adhere to the laws of nature, we would live a simpler and more satisfying life. Gee, do you think we should talk about natural law in an upcoming episode of of the show? Nature, laws of nature. Let's do that. Anyway, I've got to get myself out of here. You've been an absolutely wonderful audience. Please, I know you hear this often, but it's important for us to help refine and meet the needs of our audience. So to hear your comments. So write in Masonic Effects at all one word, FX, Masonic FX at gmail.com. Write in your comments and tell us what you like, your suggestions. Don't get into, if you're just there to complain about Masonry being the devil's spawn, forget it. No, we're just doing, we're just like you. We're just trying to get by the best way we can. And one day at a time, truthfully, don't have to be an addict to get into that. All we're trying to do is not one day, one moment at a time. Live in the moment. Here's a little Coleman Hawkins. I just love Coleman Hawkins. This will send you off, I hope, with a mindset that you deserve for the rest of the week. Until we see you again here on Masonic Effects. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us. This is a guy that said music should always be an adventure. So this is a shout out to a fan of the program, Michael. You know who you are. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you.
Thank you. There's a girl and she's old.